You are about to enjoy a production of the Ella Wellness Network. This is Wellness Fixes the Pod. I'm your host, Dr. Kelsey Vick, and I'm so happy you're here. Welcome to the Wellness Sisterhood. Today, I'm getting on my soapbox, and we are going to debunk some of the common social media phrases surrounding fitness and wellness that I see all the time on my social media feed. Welcome back to Wellness Fixes the Pod. I'm your host, Dr. Kelsey Vick, a board-certified orthopedic doctor of physical therapy, a pelvic floor physical therapist, and the owner of the Ella Wellness Sisterhood. And this is something that really grinds my gears because I know that so many creators and companies are utilizing these phrases and perpetuating the use of these phrases in their marketing programs and their strategies in order to attract audience members like me, right? Girls in their 20s, girls even younger than me in college, in high school, to really try and get them on board with whatever the program, whatever sort of lifestyle, whatever sort of clothing, whatever it is that they're selling. And it's simply not true. And I really want to debunk a lot of these myths. And so I've picked up a few common ones that I see all the time, and we're going to take the time to actually dive into the science behind it and why you should consider any sort of program or company or brand that utilizes these phrases with a yellow flag, because it's something that I want you guys to be educated on in how our bodies actually work and why these myths and these lies that are being told on social media are not what is best for our own bodies, our own mental health, our own health and wellness. So we'll dive into it. But before we begin, if this is your first time listening to the podcast, welcome. I am so glad you're here. If you're a longtime listener, I would love a like, comment, review, follow, whatever, on whatever Spotify, Apple, YouTube, whatever streaming platform you're listening on. That would greatly, greatly help me out. And then if you could share this episode with someone else who you think might also appreciate it and who might also be victim to some of these phrases and words that we all get inundated with every day. The other thing is, I need your help. I'm building a program based on one of my most loved, like most talked about, most questions asked episode, all about the menstrual cycle. And I want y'all's input because, again, I want to make this the best program. So it's going to have the workouts, of course, because, again, that's my expertise. But I want to know different characteristics that you guys want in this program, timing, frequency, all of that kind of thing. So I'm going to leave a link to a Google Forms below. And if you're interested, please fill it out. Let me know what you're looking for, what programs you've tried before that have worked, that you haven't worked, what you've enjoyed about them, all of those sorts of things. That way I can build this to be the most valuable program surrounding the menstrual cycle so that we can all feel that much more confident in our bodies and work with our female bodies rather than against them. So there's also going to be a space to leave your email to be able to test the program. So if you're interested, check out the description below. I'll leave the link there, but we'll dive in. Again, I've picked up some of the common phrases that I hear that I want to debunk. And again, I'm going to try to keep this short, sweet, to the point. And again, as always, filled with science-backed, research-backed information around why these phrases are not my favorite, and better ways to approach it when you see that phrase in different posts or content that you consume. So the first one is snatched waist, and I see this one a lot. So it'll be surrounding a core workout that can get you a snatched waist, or foods to help you get a snatched waist. And this one really bugs me because, like, what even is a snatched waist? Is it that sort of like hourglass figure? Again, that is genetic. So there's some of us who are built more like rectangles, and that's totally okay. And snatching our waist will really affect how our core functions, how our pelvic floor functions. And so that's my number one thing, is like, what even is it? And sometimes it is genetic. Like, some girls are just blessed with more of that hourglass figure, and then some of us are blessed with more of a rectangular, rounded, sort of not hourglass figure shape. So as a pelvic floor PT, this one might be my least favorite one, because a snatched waist, like when we think about it, what I think about it is really narrowing our waist, right? That's to me, that's what it means, is snatching our waist. And if we try to force a snatched waist, I use this example a lot, but think about a balloon, a blown up balloon, right? If we try and cinch that balloon, the pressure has to go somewhere. So it's either going to go up, but it's most often going to go down, especially in our bodies. And it's going to go down into our pelvic floor and out into our lower abdominal region, helping to create or reinforce that like lower belly pooch. That is another one that I see often that we all sort of think is aesthetically what we want to get rid of. So pressure in the abdominal pelvic cavity has to go somewhere. But if we snatch our waist through certain core exercises or poor breathing mechanics, again, think of that balloon, it's going to go down into our pelvic floor. Think leaking with running, jumping, sneezing, laughing, and then it's also going to go out into our lower abdominal region. Think lower belly pooch. Think difficulty activating those lower abdominals during our core work. So all of these things feed into that snatched waist pattern. And again, for a snatched waist, there's so many different core muscles that are involved in it. And we don't necessarily want to utilize the ones that create that sort of snatched waist pattern more than any others, because again, then that can create that cinching effect that happens at our waist, putting that poor pressure management into that lower abdominal cavity in that pelvic floor region. So this leads into the second one that I have that's about time. I always say like time to get rid of that lower belly pooch, or ab exercises to target that lower belly pooch. And this could be related to all of the cinched waist talk, right? Like if we're doing these core work to get us a snatched waist, if we're cinching that balloon up in the middle, that pressure is going to go somewhere and it's going to feed into that lower belly pooch. Again, this is all hypothetical, but this is where my mind goes, especially when we're promoting exercises that focus on getting a snatched waist or reducing that lower belly pooch. So cinching through the waist through exercises, this can be done in the wrong way, right? So getting rid of that lower belly pooch, if we're focusing on lower abdominal exercises to target that lower belly pooch, that can feed into these poor breathing patterns. This sort of, again, it all comes down to pressure management. And as a pelvic floor PT, pressure management is super important to me. But if we're doing exercises to target the lower belly pooch, which again, we can't necessarily do, which I'll get to that in a minute, but it could feed into that lower belly pooch even more because we're doing all of these core work to promote that snatched waist, which is only increasing that pressure out into that lower belly region. So this is why I prioritize breathing, especially during the workouts in the sisterhood, because there is a way to breathe to help better manage this pressure, better engage the deep core, better engage some of the core muscles involved with what people I think perceive as a snatched waist. But if we're really focusing on some of these workouts that are being presented to us, or these fueling like diets that are being presented to us, we're really feeding into the wrong thing, and we're really focusing on the wrong thing that could be contributing to each other. If we want a snatched waist, we might end up with that lower belly pooch out because some of the exercises that promote a snatched waist feed into poor pressure management within that lower abdominal region. And so this is why breathing and core work, I focus a lot on it in the sisterhood, because it is so, so important for not only the health of our deep core, the health of our backs, the health of our nervous system, like it feeds into all of these things, but it's also important because if we actually want these sort of body composition aesthetic changes, we are going to have to learn how to activate the core in the right way to promote our natural sort of body composition and not try and force this sort of like snatched waist look on someone who might be more of a rectangle like me, because again, that can only feed into some of those poor patterns, pressure into the pelvic floor, pressure out into the lower abdominal region. The other thing is where we deposit fat, whether that's the lower belly, whether that's our thighs, whether that's our hips, that is highly genetic. And sometimes that lower belly pooch can be related to where we deposit our fat related to our genetics. And that cannot be reduced with any sort of movements or any sort of workouts. That comes more systemically. So fat loss is never a like isolated process to one region. And this goes into my next one. But when we talk about an inner thigh workout or a underarm workout or a lower belly workout, lower belly pooch workout, a lot of the times the way that these are phrased are promoting fat loss in a certain area. So decrease fat in your inner thighs, promote an inner thigh gap, decrease fat in that lower abdominal region, where that lower belly pooch, right? Decrease fat in that lower belly pooch. But fat loss is not an isolated process. So if we do more inner thigh work, no, that's not going to cue our body to get rid of fat in that area and use that for energy. It's more of a systemic process. However, we can utilize movement and utilize exercise to change our muscle tissue and have these body composition changes through both movement and proper fueling, stress management, all of these things. But where we can really affect that muscle and that region is through movement and workouts, but not in the way of reducing fat, if that makes sense. Fat loss is a full body process. Muscle building can be relatively isolated, right? We want to work out our lower body. We want to work out our core. We want to work out our upper body. But doing more and more and more lower abdominal movements or inner thigh movements does not guarantee a decrease in that lower belly pooch or a decrease in that inner thigh, you know, improving that inner thigh gap, whatever is being promoted, because again, there's so many other form concerns that go into it. And there's so much like physiology and processes that go on within our body underlying just movement and fueling that go into that, including genetics. So the other thing that goes into it for especially that lower belly pooch is our organs do live there. Like we need space for those organs. And some of us have just different body shapes and body sizes where our organs are living and where we deposit fat, again, related to genetics. It can also be breathing patterns. It can be how we're performing certain exercises. It can also be the clothes that we're wearing. Again, think of that balloon. If we're wearing super tight waistband pants all the time, that is going to falsely create that hourglass like snatched waist figure, but it's also going to likely put increased pressure into that pelvic floor, out into that lower abdominal region, up into the like rib cage diaphragm area. And again, you're going to have to be working against that in your workouts, because if you wear those types of clothing every day, it's going to feed into that pattern of poor pressure management. So the last thing I have on the inner thigh workout or lower belly workout or any type of body region specific lower or like focused workout is that there is not a pathway in our brain that says like, oh, look, she's working out her inner thighs. Let's use the fat that's in that area to power that workout, which I feel like that's what some of this phrasing and marketing is targeting. It's like, oh, lower belly workout, lower belly fat loss, that goes hand in hand, right? But no, it's not the same. The way we create body composition changes is by strengthening our muscles, performing progressive overload to get that hypertrophy within the muscle tissues, while also tackling fat loss from a full body systemic perspective, not just with the body regions and the workouts that we target. And so this is why in the sisterhood, we do a variety of different workouts. We focus a lot on, I program it to where we're hitting each muscle group an appropriate amount of times throughout the week, not over and over and over and over again, to not allow for recovery for that appropriate muscle growth. Like it is a very science-backed, research-backed way of programming and heavily form-focused so that you're not feeding into some of these patterns that create these aesthetic changes that we might not want to see. The next one I have is this one exercise to achieve blank results. Do this one exercise and your deep core will be stronger than ever. That's usually what I see. And again, I know that my feed is filled with all of these sorts of things, so you guys might not even see this, but because I am in the health and wellness space, the physical therapy space, the fitness space, I see these all the time. But this one exercise to achieve blank results, like get real. Is there one diet to give us all the bodies we want? No. Is there one supplement? Is there one medication? No. In life, there's not one thing to get us everything that we ever wanted. And that's the same thing with movement and with exercise. So we all have differences in what will allow us to achieve results. And I have a few of these, but one of them is one of the primary ways that our body is affected by muscle strengthening and training is our training levels. So we have the ability to make drastic improvements, large improvements, quick improvements when we're going from sedentary too trained. So when we start off as couch potatoes or never having worked out a day in our life, the most drastic changes, the most benefit that we can see is within those first 4 to 6 weeks. Like, we see a ton of strength gains, a ton of neuromuscular gains, usually a lot more sort of fat loss because, again, we're starting from ground zero and we're adding the right stimulus on top of that. Where for those of us who do work out, who have a baseline training level, it's a lot harder for us, and we have to be more intentional with the way that we build muscle, with the way that we program our workouts. And so saying that there's this one exercise that will fix everything is obviously not right. And I know most everyone knows that, but breaking it down, it's because we all have different training levels that we're coming from. So someone who is starting off from ground zero, it might give them some of those results that they want because we have the ability to make more drastic improvements in that time frame. Whereas those of us who are a little bit more trained or used to working out or have a consistent health and wellness and workout routine, it takes us a lot longer and a lot more purposeful and intentional movements to create those changes that we want to see. So muscle physiology is consistent, but utilizing a well-rounded program to target a lot of different muscles and a lot of different ways and a lot of different patterns of activation throughout is really the way to go, rather than just one exercise to get us stronger in our deep core. And it's okay to have a favorite exercise, right? If that's your favorite, and I feel like that's some of the time what's being promoted when I see this is like that is probably their go-to exercise for the deep core, or their go-to exercises for the glutes, or their go-to diet and fueling patterns for getting them the body composition changes that they want to see. But that doesn't mean that it's right for everyone, or that doing that exercise every single day is going to get you the results that you want. And so again, that's why we prioritize it in the sisterhood, where I specifically program different muscle groups, different components, different activations of the core, different length activations throughout all of our muscles, so that we really are challenging our muscles in a more well-rounded way. That way, we're all getting the benefits from doing all sorts of different activation patterns and different strength patterns and different muscle activations compared to just one exercise for the deep core. The other ones I have two more, and these kind of go hand in hand, but lower your cortisol, or, you know, decrease your cortisol. Cortisol is like a huge hot topic, and I do want to dive into this in another podcast, but cortisol is helpful. Like, we have it in our bodies for a reason. It's actually good for us, and there are reasons that we have it. And so if we're always constantly trying to lower and decrease our cortisol, that's not necessarily going to help us in the things that cortisol is useful for. For example, especially after exercise, cortisol is helpful in sort of recycling and protein turnover to rebuild the muscles in a better way. So when we exercise, again, from a very micro standpoint, we cause micro tears within the muscle, which sends that sort of inflammation response, inflammatory process, to improve some of the rebuilding after it and building it up more and more after. And cortisol is involved in that. And so it's helpful, but chronic elevation of cortisol and sustained high levels of cortisol is what we want to sort of get away from, and what I think a lot of these creators and marketers and content people are trying to actually target. But I don't love how cortisol is being presented as this like really bad guy, because we need cortisol in our body, especially if we want to make these improvements in our body composition and aesthetic goals. But we want to better regulate our cortisol rather than always having it low, or again, because we want it high during exercise in order to help us with that response after. So cortisol is good. Cortisol is not the bad guy. Sustained high levels of cortisol is what we want to better regulate. And then this leads into the last one, but decrease inflammation within the body, decrease all sorts of inflammation. Inflammation is actually the way that our body heals. It's one of the first steps of the healing process. And in physical therapy, there are a lot of tools that we utilize, like exercise, like dry needling, where we actually want that inflammatory response after, so that we can sort of kickstart that healing process. And again, the same goes for cortisol, but these sustained high levels of inflammation are what we want to control, right? We want to get out of that chronic inflammation and that chronic inflammatory cycle and be able to better regulate it. But in general, inflammation is necessary and is beneficial for our bodies. It's just that chronic sustained level of inflammation that we want to control. And again, inflammation helps to heal. So there are some times where we don't want to take those anti-inflammatories because that's what we're actually looking for, is that inflammatory response. So these are, again, a few of my soapboxes. And again, I don't think that any of the creators or marketers or people using these phrases are trying to perpetuate a false narrative. I think it's just a way to get views and get eyes on their content and eyes on whatever their business is, so that they can reach an audience that their business is trying to target, which, again, I use a lot of these in the hashtag. So like lower belly pooch, I use it in some of my podcast titles, so again, for the same thing. But my hope is that by diving into that, people are able to see, oh, wait, she doesn't actually mean that. She is trying to explain the science behind it, so that we're all not falling for these quick, like, what do they call them? Like quick hits or views that, like clickbait. That's the term I was trying to think of, clickbait. We're not falling for all of this clickbaity things regarding other people's programs in the fitness, health, wellness, nutrition industry. So I definitely have used some of these as hashtags, mainly because I think that the audience that I'm trying to target and that I'm trying to help and educate does utilize these sorts of phrases when they're looking for workouts for their lower belly pooch, or workouts for the lower abdomen, or inner thigh workouts, or snatched waist workouts. Like, that's the way that I use these, and not that I love it, but my hope is that by using these as a way to get in front of the audience that I'm trying to better educate on their bodies, and again, on our bodies as a whole, because there's just so much good that can come out of us being better educated and better aware of what is happening in our own bodies and how we can improve it in regards to movement, fueling, sleep, stress management, all the things, right? So if you liked this episode, please share it, send it with someone. If you've heard these things before, like, let me know what you think about it. I'd love to just open up the conversation a little bit more so we can all help each other out. And again, just learn more and more about our bodies, dive deeper into our own bodies and our own physiology so that we can be better educated on what is actually going on within our own bodies. So again, I'll leave the link for that Google Forms below for you guys if you're interested in helping me build this menstrual cycle program. But if not, again, a like, comment, review, share, I would greatly appreciate it. And thank you guys again for listening to this episode, and I'll see you guys again on the next Wellness Big Sis Pod episode.